Blog Talk Radio.
Here it comes, blessed souls. We're alive because we've been blessed to stay alive by the Creator of all creation and Torah Chaim. Instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You now tune into blogtalkradio.com, and we humbly suggest we are the higher inner frequency of blogtalkradio.com because of Soul Class. This is Soul Class 567, in search of Ancient Authentic Torah Program Presentation Number 132. Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience with Creator's help. Our next broadcast is taking place right now, February 25th. It's now 9:33 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, equals Unified Soul Actualization. Program content will involve discussions on the following topics: the Book of Genesis, Chapter 7, verse 10. The Book of Proverbs, chapter 3, verse 32. Teachings from Rambam, Breslov / Chabad Hasidus, and a reading from Rabbi Dr. Shimon David Cowan's seminal work, The Theory and Practice of Universal Ethics, The Noahide Laws, which can be purchased by going to Kehot Online, KehotOnline.com. And there you just do a search for Rabbi Dr. Shimon David Cowan. Cowan, I should say. Shimon is S-H-I-M-O-N. David is D-O-V-I-D. And Cowan is C-O-W-E-N. And today's tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Eternal Creator, or I should say Universal Creator, Universal Redemption, written in oral Torah traditions of Israel. And last but not least, Children of Israel collaborating with the Children of Noah to remove hatred, jealousy, and competition, which is unnecessary. And with that being said, we're going to have to turn down the music for Blessed Brother and Soul and Prayer and Speech, the President of Beit Mazal, Rabbi Isaac Paton, where Rabbi Isaac leads a group of Merry Yehudim every Shabbat, starting at 10 a.m. this coming Shabbat at 1433 President Street, which is located in Kesser Crown Heights. On President Street, 1433 President Street, located between Kingston Avenue and Albany Avenue. The prayer will start at 10 a.m. and be laced with rich Jewish, Moroccan, North African chanting, fused together with ancient Israelite liturgy formed by our prophets and sages throughout the ages of Israel. So we've actually come to the end of the song, and let's get on with the shoe. Before we go further with the show, I just want to mention that today's broadcast is, in fact, dedicated to my father, Reb Shlomo Yaakov Ben Esther, who is resting and going from strength to strength with the blessings of the Most High at the Del Ridge Rehab Facility in Paramus, New Jersey. Also, great kudos to the Lubavitcher Shliach out there, Rabbi Moshe Grossbaum, who assisted my father have what my father called a five-minute bar mitzvah. He helped him put on tefillin last week. Hopefully that will continue. And all this was also facilitated by his father-in-law, who happens to be the Maggid Shir at the Rei Mehuvim congregation here in Kesser Crown Heights, Rabbi Moshe Klein, who also is an expert in safrus for Sifrei Torah, mezuzahs, tefillin, and is also moel, is an expert in circumcision. With that being said, blessed souls, we're now going to turn, as we usually do, to a letter of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And this is a very interesting one I just plucked out, where the Rebbe gave his opinion, dated back from January 31st, 1972, corresponding to Tu B'Shvat 5732. And this was the Rebbe's opinion about when humans hunt. And the subtitle is Not an Activity for Human Beings. So let's see what the Rebbe has to say about that. So the Rebbe wrote, actually, this was a talk, the Rebbe spoke at a gathering. Tu B'Shvat is one of the holidays of the Hebrew Jewish calendar solar year. So the Rebbe said the following. He has a gun, so he goes into the forest to shoot animals and birds. Why are you shooting, we ask? The animal roams freely and wants to live. The answer is, you don't have anything else to do. You're looking for something that will rid you of your boredom. So if you're bored, bang your head against the wall, heaven forbid. If you bang your head against the wall, it'll be painful, but you'll no longer be bored. But instead, what solution has he found? He learns how to handle a gun and trains to aim and hit a mark. Then who does he target? Not himself. He shoots an animal. He would shoot a person too, but then he would be jailed. An animal isn't going to shoot back, and neither will he end up in jail. So he goes to the forest to hunt for sport. It is something for which there is simply no place if you want to be called a human being. Yet not only do we not send people to jail for this, neither do we say that he is subhuman for causing pain to a living creature, maiming it and taking the life of an animal for no benefit whatsoever. He doesn't do it to eat meat. He does it just because he has already done something else and has nothing left to do. So he gathers a group of friends and they go out into the fields and forests and shoot. This is unfortunately socially accepted and not considered a crime, not even a small crime. People say, oh wow, what a great hunter he is. And how do they know he's a great hunter? Because upon entering his den, they see over there hangs the head of an animal he killed, and over there stands the horn of another animal he killed. What sort of achievement is this? The Rebbe concluded, God created you with intelligence in order that it should be used to build the world. But you've used God's gift to learn to damage and destroy. And you're not simply satisfied with knowledge. You utilize the money intelligence God has given you, the strength God has given you, and the guns God has given you to target a defenseless living creature. And then you decide to display your accomplishment that you can maim and kill. And that's where the Rebbe ended off. This was something that I did not expect to read. Not that I'm surprised by the Rebbe's response, but I think we're looking at something where the Rebbe was trying to point out that all the energy that it takes, blessed souls, to make money and to make a purchase of a gun and to use it for just the sporting event of just killing an animal and not to use its meat. Now, I'm not against the eating of meat. I don't think anyone should overeat their consumption of meat or fish, chicken or poultry. However, there's a purpose. We can certainly learn, I think, for one example, from the Native American Indians. If I've recalled, I think on more than one time, I've heard Native American Indians speak on the radio, people like Teocalli and Ghost Horse, and someone who has a wonderful radio show up in upstate New York, in Seneca Nation, I believe it is, in western northern New York, by the name of John, why am I forgetting his name? Please forgive me. I'm just going to queue up his name here. John Cain. His name is John Cain, and hopefully eventually we're going to interview him on the radio show. He consented to do so, talking about the whole idea that, you know, the culture of the Native American Indian was not to waste. But yet here the Rebbe was lashing out publicly, and this was going to whether it be he was intending for towards Jews or the children of Noah. Certainly a worthless pursuit. Better use all that energy and money spent to acts of kindness. How about the sport of doing kindness, blessed souls? Okay, so with that being said, let's go further. And let's turn to the book of Genesis, chapter 7, verse 10. And we don't have too much to say about it, blessed souls, because the elucidations by our sages are very terse here. But as I was told once by a young scholar here in Crown Heights, Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak Gaisinski, although it might appear on a superficial level where sometimes the commentaries are very flimsy, it doesn't mean there's nothing else to say in the Torah. It's just that certain types of elucidations are hidden away, or people just are not aware of it. And when the time when Mashiach comes, the time of the universal redemption, that we shall see that every verse, every word, every letter in the Torah will have its own unique instruction. Because remember, blessed souls, Torah means hara, instruction. So let's read chapter 7, verse 10. After the 7 days passed, the waters of the flood came upon the earth. Now, in a version of the Chumash with explanations, it's the Chumash Bereishis, the book of Genesis, which was published by Kahot Publishing Company or Society, Kahot Publishing Society. What are those 7 days? We've read in previous verses that Noah brought in the animals, or the animals came of themselves. Two by two they came, and of the animals which were eventually be suitable for animal sacrifices by human beings came in pairs of seven. But there was a period of 7 days before the waters came down. Rashi elucidates upon this, not on this verse, but later on we'll see with the help of the Most High when we get to chapter 8, verse 22 in the book of Genesis, that Rashi mentions there was a 7-day delay between the gathering of the people and the animals into the ark because a great tzaddik, a great righteous soul, had passed away. His name was Methuselah. Methuselah, according to Torah, written in oral Torah tradition, lived longer than any human being that we are aware of. Yes, there are midrashim that talk about Sarah, Bat Asher, the daughter, one of the daughters of the 12 tribes. Sarah lived even longer, but I haven't seen a date given to her years as much as Methuselah. It's mentioned explicitly, excuse me, in the portion of Bereishis, Genesis. In the book of Genesis, he lived 969 years. I believe Adam lived 960, and Noah also lived, I think, 950, 960. I think he lived to 950 years. Now, one might ask the question, since Methuselah was, in fact, the grandfather of Noah, of Noach, what about Noah's father? Noah had a father by the name of Lamech. Well, I did a little research because that question came to my mind before the program, blessed souls, and I looked back in the annotated section of this wonderful Chumash put out by Kohos Publication Society. It turned out that Lamech actually passed away 5 years before the onset of the Great Flood. And as of today, which is according to the formation, creation of Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, original man and woman, that's 5,776 years ago. So the flood took place in the year 1,656 years after Adam and Chava were created. So we're basically about 4,120 plus years after this seminal moment in the human family experience. As well, in a source from Lubavitch Rebbe's Likutei Sichos, Volume 10, pages 20 and 21, that after the 7 days of mourning for Methuselah, the next 40 days, the sun, the moon, the planets, and the stars did not shine, and therefore it was completely dark. This is the Oral Torah tradition, blessed souls, and you can learn more about it if you do your own research. Now we're going to turn to the Book of Proverbs, which is a composition by King Solomon, Shlomo Melech, and is written there in chapter 3, verse 32, "For the perverse is an abomination to the Creator, but his counsel," meaning Creator's counsel, "is with the upright." Now, Rashi, who is the primary elucidator in the Oral Torah tradition on the five books of Moses, also has what to say about the writings in Tanakh, whether it be about the prophets or the writings like Mishlei Proverbs or Ecclesiastes or the Song of Songs. And Rashi comments very tersely, what is the category in this case of being an abomination to a Creator, one who is crooked? Now, that might cause some people to shudder, and it might cause other people to be relieved. However, blessed souls, what's going on here is these axiomatic proverbial teachings are showing us how Creator, and the level that we can understand on a very simplistic level, creates various levels of gradations by which we can connect to Creator. Because no matter what we do in this creation, blessed souls, we are connected by virtue of that Creator connects to us. Now, how do we present ourselves to Creator? That's our free will. And that's why we are enjoined to learn Torah and to perform commandments, to engage in acts of kindness. And therefore, we connect to the Creator as it relates to us to Creator, either as, heaven forbid, as an abomination, or be privy, to be a receptacle for the counsel that has been defined as being upright. Now, in the Hebrew, the word sodo is connected to the idea of counsel. Which is interesting because sod also means secrets. To be privy to Creator's counsel, it means we have become vessels to the secrets of wisdom. And I'm not talking necessarily about very highfalutin, esoteric, you know, paradigms, Kabbalistic, mystical incantations. We're talking about meat and potatoes, wisdom. How does one run one's life? As according to the blessing of the Creator. How does one interact in society? So we are assured that if we go in a straight path and avoid the crookedness, as Rashi said is alluded to at the beginning of this verse, that we are zocha, we are meritorious to the secrets which are called the counsel of Creator. And that's one of the things we've tried to do in our humble efforts here, blessed souls, is to demystify this process. You know, it's so easy to say, well, God is great and God is everything. Yeah, but the Creator revealed something of Creator's self through our eternal Torah in a way that we should have some sort of cognitive, emotional response and hopefully expansion of our emotional capacities that we become better human beings, not necessarily to preaching to the choir, but exemplifying these type of virtues. So again, if we want to be on the side of being a vessel to Creator's counsel, we have to go in a straight way. And if we want to connect in the Creator, that we present ourselves as an abomination, we should stop acting in a crooked way. And Rashi says in a crooked way, and the language of the abomination, to'avat, also relates to other types of human conduct, crooked to the purpose of human existence. But again, I'll leave that to you, blessed souls, to Google up abomination according to the oral written Torah traditions to find out and do your own research and come up with your own conclusions. Again, I'm not asking you to conclude as I do, but to be aware of the fact that perhaps you weren't aware of a certain perspective, which is afforded you if you connect to our holy Torah, whether you be a Jew or the blessed children of Abraham. Now we want to turn to, because unfortunately we don't have, well, I would say fortunately, that our Rambam's teacher, student, disseminator, activist for spreading the teachings of the Nesher Gadol, the great eagle, Rambam, Maimonides, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Dennis Ryan, is having a peaceful and pleasant vacation, I pray. And when he comes back, hopefully next week, he'll talk about his adventures that he shared with his wife, and he can share with us and his family. So in the meantime, I'm going to take his place, and I want to pluck out it from very sweet teachings. You know, blessed, I'm in the field of social services. When I'm not doing blog talk radio, I'm not being a married man, I'm not being a family man, and I'm trying to be friends to the people in my community and to all people as much as I can. At least, the very least, I can be a good neighbor in my thoughts, and it should only be that I can increase in my speech and action as well during my busy multitasking day. The idea of healing the ill is something which is a idea which is, Baruch Hashem, part and parcel of my lifestyle. I just consider myself to be collaborating with the process of healing on an emotional level, psychiatric level, psychological level. Yes, there are forward progressions and mistakes made on my part and the part of my clients and other people that I interact with the creation, but to empower us, this is the beauty of Torah. Rambam actually wrote a series of teachings, very terse teachings, 8 chapters on talking about the human psyche. And this chapter 4 is called Healing the Spiritual Ill, which is, I'm plucking inspirations from Shmona Prokim of the Rambam, the 13 principles of faith, as well as his explanations on Perkei Avot, the ethics of our fathers, which is published by Maznayim Publishing Company, Corporation, located in Brooklyn, New York, 4304 12th Avenue. And they have a wonderful catalog to read books that are printed in Hebrew and Yiddish, but also many books have been translated into English. And this is one of those books. Let's go further into the Rambam's teachings. Good conduct is conduct that is balanced between two extremes, each of which is unfavorable. One is excess, and the other restriction. Personal virtue refers to tendencies and habits that are equally balanced between bad tendencies of excess and restriction. For from one's character traits comes one's conduct. For example, restraint is the intermediate quality between indulgence and the lack of any feelings of desire. Thus, restraint is a positive activity. The character trait that leads to restraint is a positive character trait. We can even suggest, as we just mentioned in the book of Proverbs, restraint is a straight way to develop positive character traits, ultimately that a person can be more meritorious to receive the counsel of the Creator. And of course, that's through Torah study and prayer and fellowshipping with other human beings on these matters. Rambam went on to say, gluttonous desire, by contrast, is one extreme, and the lack of desire is another extreme, both of which are utterly undesirable. They stem from the character traits of excess and restriction, respectively, and represent two of the inferior qualities. Similarly, generosity is the medium between stinginess and profligacy, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Assurance is the medium between rashness and timidity. Good-naturedness is the medium between aggressiveness and shyness. Humility is the median between pride and lowliness. Modesty is the median between ostentatiousness and ignobility. Self-content is the median between greed and indolence. Patience is the median between anger and insensitivity. Reservation is the median between impudence and reticence. Similar concepts apply with regard to the other emotional traits. The names we have used for these traits are not significant. What is important is the concept as a whole to be understood. Many people make the mistake with regards to these forms of conduct, thinking that either of the extremes is desirable. For instance, when they see a rash individual who is willing to risk danger, who enters perilous situations on the chance he will be able to escape, they praise him and call this courage. I guess today you would call these stunt people, stunt men, stunt women, people who walk a tight wire strung over between two large buildings, and one mistake would be their final mistake, God forbid. And there are others who designate the insensitive as patient and the indolent as self-content. Similarly, they might refer to a person who is frigid and passionless by nature as restrained. Also, this mistaken approach might consider lavishness and boastfulness as praiseworthy conduct. Rambam goes on to say, this is all an error. The intermediate path is what is praiseworthy. It should be the path to which a person should aspire and according to which he or she should direct his or her conduct. Know that positive and negative character traits are acquired and reinforced solely through the repetition of the types of conduct that stem from these traits. And repeating these deeds numerous times over an extended period of time, how much more so that is praiseworthy. When a human being, he or she, habituates himself or herself to positive conduct, he or she will actually acquire the virtues that motivate it. And when he or she habituates himself or herself to undesirable conduct, Hashem have mercy on them, he or she will acquire these defaults. At times, these habits train a human being to conduct himself or herself according to the median. And at times, he may conduct himself according to the extremes, as we mentioned. And thus, his soul will develop an infirmity by virtue of extreme behavior. To heal himself or herself, he should emulate the example followed when healing the body. Meaning, when the balance of the body deviates to one extreme, one should intentionally compel it to the other until an equilibrium is established. Once he reaches equilibrium, or he or she reaches equilibrium, he or she should turn away from the other extreme and return to persistently follow the path that will enable him or her to maintain his or her equilibrium. This approach should be followed with regard to all the emotional traits. For example, we see a person has already developed miserly qualities. This is one of the undesirable character traits that lead to improper conduct, as explained previously in this chapter. If we want to heal this person, we should not instruct him to conduct himself with generosity. That would be trying to use a balanced remedy to heal someone whose nature has been overcome with warmth. This would not cure his affliction. Rather, we should instruct him or her to spend freely time after time repeating free-spending conduct until he has driven from his soul the character traits that led him to miserly conduct. Now, of course, Rambam is not telling anyone to become bankrupt if they have to change their miserly conduct. I just want to make that as a parenthetical thought. Indeed, he or she should continue almost to the point that he or she has acquired the nature of a free spender. At that point, he or she should abandon free spending, and we should instruct him or her to follow the median of generosity consistently, showing neither excess nor deficiency. Similarly, if we see him or her behaving like a spendthrift, we should instruct him or her to conduct himself frequently as a miser. But there is no need to repeat miserly conduct as frequently as mentioned above with regard to free spending. The point is a fundamental principle of healing and it is its secret. It is easier for a person to return the median, meaning in this case generosity, from free spending than for him to return to generosity This point is a fundamental principle of healing and is its secret. It is easier for a person to return to the median generosity from free spending than for him or her to return to the generosity from miserliness. Similarly, it is easier to return from a lack of desire to the median of restraint than to return from overindulgence to restraint. Therefore, we will instruct the overindulgent to repeat acts that show a lack of desire more frequently than is necessary for a person who lacks desire to perform acts of indulgence. Similarly, we will instruct the timid to act rashly more frequently than the rash to act timidly, and the ignoble to display ostentation more frequently than the ostentatious must practice ignobility. This is an important principle with regard to curing disorders within character traits. Rambam heeds to us to remember it. For this reason, the pious would not necessarily direct their character traits to the median, but rather would bend slightly in the direction of excess or deficiency as a safeguard. For example, a person would deviate slightly from restraint to a lack of desire, from assurance to rashness slightly, or from modesty to ostentatiousness slightly, from humility to lowliness slightly. This same applies with regard to other character traits, as our Israelite sages allude to this in their emphasis on going what is known as beyond the measure of the law. And that's what we'll conclude in that point where Rambam quoted, outsourced, the idea of beyond the measure of the law is where you can learn more about it by going to Talmudic tractate Brachos, the oral Torah tradition of Israel, and what does it mean to make a blessing, different types of blessings to make on foods and other matters. Page 7, side A of that Talmudic tractate. So, with that being said, blessed souls, we're now going to move on to the wonderful world of Chassidus. And we'll be turning to, as we have been, Rabbi Nachman's Chassidus. Rabbi Nachman lived from 1772, 1810, and his influence is still evidenced not only by the descendants of his original followers, the Breslov Chassidim, but by not only other Jewish people, but as well the Blessed Children of Noah. One can see videos of such an elevated individual like Rabbi Shalom Arush, Shlita, of the Torah Shel Chesed, the Instructions of Kindness Yeshiva in Jerusalem, as he occasionally leaves the line of Israel, and he speaks to Bnei Noah, the children of Noah, about attributes of Chassidus and the rectification of their emotional attributes in order they should become more plastic and widened and healthier. He's had great success. So here we're quoting from, we'll be plucking inspirations from, I should say, from Erech Apayim, which literally means long in anger, or the divine attribute of patience, which on the most microcosmic of levels, we teeny tiny human beings should sort of try to emulate that attribute. And here we're talking about this whole idea now of secluding oneself. What does it mean to seclude? First of all, there has to be a cognitive recognition of the ability in oneself to separate from the mindless clutter and chatter that takes place in the world, whether it be on the internet, television, radio, music, promoting matters which are actually injurious to the soul, promote discord among human beings, promote what we call yush, the sense of giving up, not having any more hope or faith, God forbid, in the Creator, and what He has bestowed upon the human family experience. So it takes a simple type of munah that we can invest time within ourselves to engage in what is known as his bodhidut, as we're going to get a depiction of it right now, according to these works of Rabbi Nachman. And therefore, Rabbi Nachman has an advice that a person should seek for himself a open place where there's no person to be found, in a field, maybe by a jetty, by the ocean, in a forest. And I think the idea, generally speaking, among the Breslov is to go out into nature. But you can do this also in your home, blessed souls. I mean, I myself have what I call my meditation chair, a chair that's suspended by a metal chain that swivels and goes backwards and forwards like a timepiece. And on Shabbat, when we finish the meal and I'm exhausted, I sit back and I rock back and forth as I listen to my family and friends speak. If you have something like that, I would urge you to, you can do Hisbodrus. You can separate yourself from the world there too. But again, the essential Hisbodrus has to already take place in your mind. You have to find that field, that open space in your mind where you can speak what is on your mind and heart before the Creator may be blessed. Everything that's in your heart, everything that you're going through. Go and specify it in detail after detail. Well, something doesn't seem to be going your way, and then ask and supplicate to the Creator with mercies and supplications that the Creator should have mercy upon himself. Then in this particular case, that a person should merit to find his soulmate, who is known as Ivugo. And a person should not give up on himself from the mercies in any way in this world. Because one day, he or she, if you are so inclined as a woman to engage in this practice as well, the word of the Creator will be emanated out that you should find your soulmate, the help of the Creator. And of course, hopefully you'll be in the company of good friends to help you in this process. But a person has to learn to be a sovelin gadol, have great tolerance. We have to be able to bear what passes by us, but it's those, no one has it easy in this world. Yes, there are people that are spoiled. Yes, there are people that were born with a golden spoon. Yes, there were people born with a high-tech spoon. Yes, there are people that from day one until their last breath on earth after their proverbial 120 years will never worry about how they sustain themselves and their families and their descendants. But, you know, we're talking about maybe 1% of 1%. Very few people have that, but for the rest of us, we have to be prepared to understand, just as a, you know, where can we learn this? A woman is able to bear the pain and the agony, discomfort, the anxiety of having, carrying the blessings of a seed implanted within her by her blessed soulmate, and eventually give forth to a beautiful, healthy baby boy or baby girl. We're also in a birthing process for what we need, whether it be for a good shidduch, a good soulmate, to find a better job, to find a better house, to find a better way of making money, and find a better way to give more charity, to do good, and just the opposite of going hunting, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program. And even though in this time of frustration and bearing all these matters that pass through us, sometimes seeming like vinegar on an open wound or salt on an open wound, inside of us there could be an inclination that's burning like on fire, that we might stumble in our ways of acting as good people. However, the antidote for this, or the remedy, or the preventative action, the proactive action, is a person must be stubborn. We must be stubborn people, blessed souls, in this manner to continually to relate to the Creator with all of our heart and all of our matters and all the particularities, as a person would speak to his dear friend, with a simplicity and with a earnestness, a purity, a sense of innocence. This Creator knows what we want. But a parent, I mean, lahavdil, the parent usually knows what the child wants, especially when they're little. But still, it gives the parent pleasure to hear the child ask for their needs, because it shows that they have become acutely aware that they need certain things. Creator can give us to us without us asking, but the way the Torah is that it is a Torah commandment to ask for what we need. And for many people, they need a proper mate. They need someone to collaborate with them in their life struggle and life accomplishments. And Rabbi Nachman, as we'll conclude this section here, this idea of seeking out the Creator in solitude within your mind, and if need be, go out to a field or find your own, so to speak, meditation chair, is accomplished through the agency of understanding, with a simple belief that as much as you can try to understand the effects of prayer, just pray. Just pray. And hopefully you'll be meritorious to see that your prayers were in fact answered. So we're now going to move on succinctly to some teachings of Chassidus. Now, I usually have a book referring to the oneness of the human body. I don't have access to it right now, so we're just going to pull something out here. A teaching from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And let's just see here. I think we're going to pull up a letter from the Rebbe on what is known as the Wheel of Fortune. And then we'll go further. The Rebbe wrote to someone back in 1954 about a setback they had in their business efforts. The Rebbe goes on to say, this was in 1954, the 11th of Menachem Av, which happens to be the day of ascension of a great tzaddik and mekubal, of Hillel Meparich. This is a letter the Rebbe wrote 62 years ago. The Rebbe wrote, I'm sorry to note some discouragement in your outlook by reason of the setback you had in business. Surely you know that our sages refer to the Wheel of Fortune. In the modern society, people would associate that with a game show. But the Wheel of Fortune is something which has a source in oral Torah tradition. And after a turn of a wheel downward must come a turn upward, but a lack of faith does not help it. Besides, there is also the psychological effect, and lack of courage and assurance brings with it a lessening of initiative, etc. Actually, there has been a general business recession, and your setback, as the Rebbe was addressing to a wealthy man, was not exceptional, while the worst in business seems to be over. In that period where there was an economic decline, it seemed to be over, and hopefully things would get better. The Rebbe concluded, in view of all the above, it is my decided opinion that you have no cause for worry, and you should be quite firm in your faith in God, that things will improve while doing everything in a natural way. One should never forget that it's God's blessings which bring success, and God is not limited to business cycles. So that as long as you keep the channels of Torah and Mitzvahs wide open, especially in everything connected with the Jewish home, and I want to universalize that the children of Noah shouldn't be surprised when they keep their home according to their Torah and Mitzvahs, the seven Mitzvahs, which are seven core commandments. You should have every confidence in the flow of God's blessings. That's just a little outtake from a letter that the Rebbe wrote to someone, and hopefully this will reach the right person at the right time to give them the courage to move further on in their business and life endeavors, even though sometimes things seem a little bit rough. Okay, we're moving now to the last segment of today's program. We'll be plucking from a wonderful book by a wonderful young man, even though he's a little older than me, Rabbi Dr. Shimon David Cowan, The Theory and Practice of Universal Ethics. The Theory and Practice of Universal Ethics, the Noahide Laws. As I mentioned before, you can get this book at Kahat Publishing Society. Reading from page 17. Our purpose in discussing the Noahide conception of a human being in the image of God is in conjunction with Frankl's work. We were talking about the psychotherapist and writer, Viktor E. Frankl, who survived the Holocaust and served as a counterweight to Freudian psychology. Our purpose in discussing the Noahide conception of human being in the image of God in conjunction with Frankl's work is not to present Frankl as a source, let alone an authority, in Noahide perspective or law. He himself might not even have known about the Noahide commandments as such, though undoubtedly the substantial congruence of his work with this teaching wells out of his own Judaic practice. As Rabbi Dr. Cowan noted, that he actually married out of his faith. He was a Holocaust survivor, and this happened with many Jews after the Holocaust. During the Holocaust, some out of miracles of trying to survive that wicked, evil period in the history of the human family experience, he stayed married to his wife, who was not of the Israelite people, but still, he was approached and he put on tefillin, which is a positive commandment from the Torah, on his arm and head and prayed daily. And before he passed away, he chose to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. It was this Jewishness, and specifically its supra-rational element of belief, that ensured for Frankl genuine transcendence of meaning corresponding to objective universal values, which Cowan wrote in his writing Universal Religion, Viktor Frankl and Gordon Allport, published in the Journal of Judaism and Civilization, Volume 4, published in 2002, pages 90 and 91. His work, however, referring to Viktor Frankl, is a valuable vehicle in adumbrating the concept of the soul as the image of God in the human being, since his work has already entered and is known in Western culture. The truth of the matter is, I heard about Viktor Frankl, I think it was in the late 1990s, when a friend of mine, Reb Tuvia Tateka Cohen, who was a school psychologist, became enamored by his teachings and used to share them with me, just, you know, not reading out of the book directly, but giving a little synopsis. At the time, I wasn't interested, but lo and behold, here we are 16, 17 years later. I'm talking about Viktor Frankl, who I was first introduced to by Reb Tuvia Tateka Cohen. Moreover, because of its engagement with Freud, it may be a lever in transforming levels to the cultural repression of personal religious experiences largely affected or at least promoted by Freud's writings, and of which is the epitaph in Freud's own characterization of religion as, quote-unquote, the general human obsessional neurosis. Well, this was cited and discussed by Frankl in his Der Unbewusst Gott, published in 1974, page 63 in Munich. So Freud took a very extreme viewpoint. Now, I'll be honest with you as well, blessed souls, I don't call my Judaic observance as a religion as much as its Torah Chaim, the instructions of life. But each one of us is entitled to call what we want to call it. Frankl gave the higher meaning seeking, let me read that again. Frankl gave the higher meaning seeking and affirming faculty in the person a variety of names. These include the spirit, unconscious religiosity, the moral instinct, the metaphysical need, and conscience. This aspect of the self is to be distinguished both from the emotional and physical needy and expressive self of the physical person, as well as from mind or intellect with its quality of reason. Rather, this is the distinctly impelled moral self, which by its nature seeks to persuade intellect to transcend the relative self-centered existence of the bodily personality. And, blessed souls, how can we use our intellect to be persuaded to go beyond our bodily needs, not to deny them, but to transcend them, not to just be bodily human beings, but also be soulful human beings, be unconsciously religious, morally instinctful, be engaging in metaphysical needs, to engage in our spirit, which is ultimately outsourced from our divine image. That's through learning Torah and praying and doing acts of kindness, mitzvahs. At this point, blessed souls, we're going to end. I want to thank you all for listening, whether you're listening live or on the eventually to be presented archive version here in Blog Talk Radio Land and on my Facebook page and our Soul Class Appreciation Society. And I also want to mention, blessed souls, that we are looking for sponsors of our humble efforts. We are trying to upgrade our broadcasting abilities in order that we can have a better audio transmission without the commercials sometimes which precede our archive versions, because many times the products are promoting matters which we don't directly want to promote, such as food which is not kosher, because I don't want to... For Ben Noah, most vast majority of, so to speak, non-kosher food is permissible to him or her, but I don't want to give the impression that, for instance, recently there was a promotion of hamburgers, which are not according to Torah specifications of how to eat kosher meat. I think it was from one of these major hamburger chains, fast food chains. I'm not there to promote them. It's because of the level of premium that we're connected to, and I'm not asking for you to feel sorry for me, but this is where we're holding right now. So we are looking to raise about $3,000. Unfortunately, I'm still not a non-for-profit organization. We're looking to do that hopefully in the future. If you'd be interested in sponsoring one of our programs where we get public acknowledgement for your heroic and kind efforts to empower me to broadcast to a larger audience. We've done shows for the past 5.5 years now, 5.5+ years now. This is our program number 567, and is what, as of what, so, excuse me, Blog Talk Radio can catalog or capture, we've had over 130,000 listens, but they've also admitted in their tutorials that many more people could be listening in, just they cannot capture every listening of any audience member. So it could be double, it could be triple. In fact, someone even told me in the last year that one of the programs we did was actually being sold on Amazon, though I couldn't find the source for that. But we have, in fact, had some sort of popularity, and it seems to be growing. And more and more people seem to be enthusiastic because we do offer for those who come on the program to express their views in a public, international, cyberspace way that otherwise they might not have the opportunity to do so. So we are basically going to end up by saying, if you want to collaborate with me in my efforts, humble efforts, you can contact me on my email page, my email, at Don Goodman, and then press numerical 6. That's dongoodman6@gmail.com. You can also reach me through Facebook in the private messaging. And you can also call me on my cell phone or text me. I don't have voicemail on my cell phone, but you can text me and I can call you back with your number if you leave it for me at 347-613-4615. That's 347-613-4615. We're going to end off right now, In the Now, by David Dohm, who's my brother, who's going to take us back home to help us realize and internalize our Tzelem Elohim is no dream. Our divine image will help us get on scrimmage. And just remember, blessed souls, whether you want to hear it or not, but I feel it's my duty to remind you, you've got to be good. And with you having to be good, the reason why you got to be good, and you can be good, and you will be good, I believe, in the future, if not right now, is that Teva Tov Lehetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good. The Creator is the source of all goodness. Had a good plan. The greatest plan ever. He put you and I and all the 7 billion plus human beings here on this earth to make it a humble abode for the indwelling of Shekhinah, of divine presence. May all this transpire in a way of a Havachad, one love, Goralachad, one destiny, Kulam for all of us, B'dachi Noam, B'dachi Shalom, in a pleasant, peaceful way. Laham Sheikh Be'ez Hashem Yisbrek, to be continued with the help of the Most High. Take care, everyone. In the Now by David Dohm. Enjoy.
It don't matter to me where you've been. The people you knew and the places you've seen. If you've been hungover and you've broken a heart, we all have our very own place to start. There ain't no one who hasn't done anything wrong. And now's your chance to make it all turn out just right. keep looking.